There is a sense in which the best thing to do with the story of Samson is simply to read the chapters 13, 14, 15, and 16 of the book of Judges, because these chapters expose in very vivid detail the story and the flaws of this man who had been destined from birth to be a man of God. His name appears in the roll of honor of the heroes and heroines of the faith in Hebrews chapter 11. And when you read through that list of names in Hebrews 11, you're not surprised to see certain names. But on the other hand, you can be very surprised to find some other names there. Well, the name of Abraham, that's an obvious choice to have near the top of the list. But then there's Sarah, Abraham's wife. She laughed at God's promise. And yet, she's named there. Jacob, he's in the list. And he was a complicated character, not the kind of man, really, that you would like to do business with. He was a double dealer, and yet his name was there. Joseph, oh, well, you see, there's a clear case for naming Joseph. Because he was a great fellow. Once he got over his adolescent pride and boastfulness, and God had to use some very strong methods, including an unjust prison sentence, before Joseph was weaned away from his adolescent pride and boastfulness. He was far past the adolescent years before he got rid of his adolescent attitudes and his adolescent boastfulness. But Joseph is there. Moses is another obvious choice. Rahab the harlot, rather surprising. And then when we come to the verse that we mentioned last week, verse 32 of Hebrews chapter 11, time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel. These first four names, the name of four of the judges of Israel, all of them seem to be very flawed characters. Gideon was the kind of man of God who was always uncertain. He was always needing signs and miracles to reassure his faith. Barak, you remember the other Sunday evening, Barak was the kind of man who came forward to serve God only when challenged by Deborah about the lack of men for the work of God. And in our next study in a fortnight's time, we'll come to Jephthah, a judge of Israel, the kind of man who made stupid promises and then felt obliged to keep these stupid promises, despite the fact that the keeping of the stupid promise would bring deep hurt and distress to other people. And we have Samson, another man who was far from perfect. And I suppose one of the lessons we have to learn as we hurry on is the lesson that Paul declares in, is it the first chapter of 1 Corinthians, round about verse 26, where Paul says that God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things that are mighty. And there is great wisdom in God's doing, because when God lays his hand upon someone weak and then works mighty works through that person, the weak man has to say, well, it couldn't have been me, not the likes of me. It must have been God. And therefore it is safe for God to use such a person. And God, you see this in the story of Samson. God chooses the weak and works with them, and by his grace and his love, oh, so persistent in his grace and his love, he takes these weak, fallible creatures and makes them characters of faith and service and stature far beyond what seemed to be possible, humanly speaking. To put it into contemporary language, you can have someone saying, oh, he'll never make a minister, or he'll never make a missionary. And God says, oh no. And God proceeds to do it. Now, it's obvious from the story that Samson was a complicated character. A very complicated character. And he made many mistakes. And many proud rebellions. Samson was the kind of man who tended, as an immediate reaction, to refuse to listen to any advice or any correction. But God persisted. It's a great story, really. God didn't ditch Samson. Like the story we have in the 18th chapter of Jeremiah, the story of the potter and the clay. When the vessel was marred in the hands of the potter, God, the great potter and fashioner of our lives, persisted. He crushed down the clay, he started again, and if these hard and sharp sherds were still there, spoiling the shape of the vessel, then he would pick out the flaws, and he would go on, and he would mold and mold and mold. And this is what God did with Samson. And Samson was used by God. He judged Israel for 20 years. There was nobody who could stand against the power of the Philistines the way that Samson did. There was nobody who could give the children of Israel hope for the future other than Samson. And he did it. In spite of all his faults, he was used by God and used greatly. And in a sense, he died honorably. I tried to put as much feeling as possible into the words when I read at the end of the story, blinded Samson, an object of derision. They made sport of him. They got him into the arena like a clown. And Samson, I wonder when he had last prayed. Samson said, Lord, remember me. And I think the good Lord said, I, Samson, I remember you. But God heard his prayer. And in a sense, Samson died honorably. Oh, and there's got to be this but. How much more Samson could have been used by God, but for his pride. Now, the story, as we say, is recorded in the book of Judges, chapters 13, 14, 15, and 16. The story of a man marked out for God from the very time that he was conceived in his mother's womb. That's chapter 13 at verse 5. The boy shall be a Nazarite to God from birth. And he will begin to deliver Israel from the hand of the Philistines. Now that was Samson. The rest of chapter 13 makes plain, and we tried to point this out as we read the chapter. I'm thinking particularly of verses 21 to 23. The rest of chapter 13 makes plain that Samson's mother was far more intelligent and far more spiritual than his father. And when I think of Samson's father and mother and the tremendous differences in them, both humanly and spiritually, I cannot help feeling that they had a very, very poor basis for a marriage. There needs to be compatibility. Oh yes, attraction is important, I suppose. But there needs to be compatibility, both in the realm of intellect and spirituality. And there just doesn't seem to have been that in Samson's parents. And then, of course, the child was born. We're towards the end of the chapter, verse 25. The child was born and grew, and it very soon became evident that God was with him. The Spirit of the Lord began to stir him between Zorah and Eshtaol. And this young man, Samson, began to be aware of the fact that the hand of God was upon him, and he began to do things in the name of God for the people of God. He began to fulfill his destiny, which was declared while he was still in the womb of his mother. And at the end of chapter 13, we are left with a clear awareness of the fact that here is a man with a future, spiritually speaking, in relation to God. But of course, not all young men who give evidence of having a spiritual future realize that potential. Samson was one of them. The Bible tells of others, and the story of the past 30 years in this congregation tells of others. Young men and women who at one stage showed such promise that our hearts were thrilled. And in so many of their lives there has been something of a spiritual abortion. And the promise that was evident at one stage has never been fulfilled. But at the end of chapter 13, we see this young man as a man with a future. God was at work on a scale that was far, far bigger than Samson or his parents realized. That's the significance of chapter 14, verse 4. Samson's father and mother didn't realize that God was in all this, because God was working out his purpose of judgment in relation to the Philistines. But God was also working out his purpose with regard to Samson. And I have no doubt at all that Samson had been told by his parents as soon as he was a little boy old enough to know that God had chosen him for special service. You can imagine Samson saying to his parents, why must I wear my hair longer than the other boys? They're all getting their hair cut. Why not me? Ah, would say his parents, in the law of Moses, this was the obvious sign to signify not only to you but to others that you are a person set apart for God. And no doubt the little boy would be quite impressed. And we need to tell our little boys and our little girls, this is part of the significance of infant baptism, we need to tell them that they are children of the covenant, that they are chosen by God and called by God and blessed by God and protected by God and prayed for by God's people. I wonder if some of the youngsters here in church tonight are aware of the fact of how much some of the people you see in church tonight have prayed for you. Oh, but you say, Mr. Willoughby, I don't know them. No, maybe you don't. But they know you. And they've prayed for you. Some of them have prayed for you from the very day that you were baptized here in this church. You think about that. Because it's true. And I believe Samson, from the time he was a boy, had been told by his parents of these things. Told of God's plan. Told of God's promise. And very soon, this is clear from chapter 14, verse 6, I think it is. Yes, the story of Samson with bare hands killing the lion. Soon it became evident that there was a significant God-given strength and decisiveness in this man's life. There was a capacity. It's interesting that it's told here that after the incident with the lion, he didn't tell his parents. He didn't boast about it. But you know, there was also a certain streak of cruelty in Samson. Remember the foxes and tying their tails and setting them on fire so that they ran through the fields of the Philistines' corn. I came across, I think it was in one of the commentaries, that the only part of the Nazarite vow that Samson really seemed to honor was the business of no razor coming upon his hair. And so we have in chapter 14, verses 1 to 3, the beginning of the devil's intervention in the story of this young man who was destined for great service. And I'm sure we've got to see the devil here. Samson went down to Timnah and he saw one of the daughters of the Philistines. And he was hooked and committed straight away. He rushed into an emotional involvement and an emotional commitment, a romantic one, on the basis of immediate attraction. Now, he didn't say, "Does this relationship please God?" Never crossed his mind to say that. I wonder if there are romantic relationships here in church tonight, and the two Christians concerned have never really said to themselves or to each other, "Does this relationship please God?" Nor did Samson seem to ask the question, "Can this girl..." Well, obviously she was an unbeliever. She was a Philistine. "Can this girl help me to be all that God wants me to be and all that God has called me to be?" And there are not a few evangelical ministers have got married without asking the question, "Can this girl help me to be the kind of minister that God wants me to be?" Samson didn't seem to ask the question, "Can this girl be with me and partner me in all that I want to be?" Because, you see, I believe that Samson had something of an awareness of at least some of his capacities and some awareness of the hand of God upon him. And understandably, he had hopes for his future. But he didn't seem to ask the question, "Can this girl be with me and partner me in all that I want to be?" And the answer, of course, to all these questions was no. he committed himself to an immediate romantic involvement. Get her for me. And his parents remonstrated. But how many Christian young people consult their parents or listen to their parents with regard to this kind of relationship? If Samson had spoken to his parents, they would have reminded him, well, certainly they did remind him. They reminded him of the Nazarite vow. They reminded him and said, Samson, you're set apart for God. You can't go and marry a Philistine. I'm going to. I like her. There's an end of it. She pleases me. And this was the flaw in Samson's whole spiritual life and relation to God. It was self-will and self-pleasing. And of course, I don't want to emphasize this too much, but of course in the story it is obvious that here is a young man who was far too fond of the girls and far too attractive to the girls, and he knew that he was attractive to the girls. Oh, be careful. Fellows who are attractive and girls who are attractive. There's a devil. That's why it's so important that our relationships should be right. There is far too much involved. But I think it's also clear from the story that Samson, self-willed, self-pleasing, Samson was also sure, very sure, that he was spiritually and morally strong enough to... Oh, he would say, yes, yes, I know she's an unbeliever, but then you see, my spiritual life is strong. I can hold my own position. This won't take me away. Was it Spurgeon who used the illustration? He said, you stand on the floor, you stand up on top of the kitchen table. Now, you on the table, try to pull the other one up, and you on the floor, try to pull the other one down. Who'll win? The one who pulls you down. It's a very vivid illustration. Ah, but Samson thought, I've known about God since I was a little boy. I've been prayed for not only by my parents, but by my parents' friends all through my childhood and youth and adolescence and young manhood. I know what I think spiritually. I know what I believe. I know where I stand. This is not going to take me away from God. He was sure that spiritually and morally he was strong enough to cope. I don't think that Samson ever really wanted to leave God. But he did. I'm sure that he was a man of capacity and of courage and with a real sense of justice. But all the potential, humanly and spiritually, was siphoned away because he was too fond of the adulation of women. And in due time, it weakened his moral fiber as well as his spiritual commitment. And that is why we have recorded at the beginning of chapter 16 that Samson went to Gaza, and there he saw a harlot. She was attractive, so he went with her. Now go down to chapter 16 at verse 4 and from there to the end. The story of Samson and Delilah. A very sad story. How come that Samson didn't realize that this woman was going to be the death of him spiritually? He must have been aware that he was tight-roping, because he evaded all her blandishments with regard to his separation unto God. He told her all sorts of things. Oh, do this and I want of any strength, but then he proved it was wrong. And oh, but if you do this, oh, she said, oh, now Samson, if you really love me, if you really, oh, you've heard this so often. Now, if you really love me, you won't expect me to give up my Saturday night to go to a prayer meeting with you, surely. If you really love me, you won't expect me to go twice every Sunday. I hesitate to mention this, but I vouch for its truth. A minister of the Church of Scotland was getting married, and the bride-to-be said to her husband, a young minister, "Now, I hope you won't expect me to go to church with you." And he married her. Very sad, isn't it? The story here of Samson and Delilah is the story of how a man set apart for God. I wonder how many older men, Christian men, there are here tonight who look back over the years and say, yes, I had a relationship like that. It didn't go off the rails, morally speaking, but it quenched and it qualified my usefulness to God. And that's why some of us older people have to be prepared to counsel younger people. They won't take kindly to it if we interfere with their romantic relationships. So we've got to be wise. But here is the story of a man set apart for God, prolonging a relationship, even though he was given repeated warnings that it wasn't a right relationship, that God wasn't in it, and warnings that it was spiritually dangerous. He still thought that he was in command of the situation. Oh, he said, I know what I'm doing. He didn't. He still thought he was in command of himself, but he wasn't. He was being manipulated by Delilah. And Samson still thought that he was in command of his relationship with God and his service for God. But he wasn't. And so we come to that awful verse, chapter 16, verse 20. The Philistines are upon you, Samson. And he awoke from his sleep and he said, I will go out as at other times and shake myself free. And he did not know that the Lord had left him. Wouldn't it be awful to be a minister and go into your pulpit to conduct a service and to preach and to become aware of the fact that God is no longer with you? I think in that 20th verse we have an indication that Samson at heart, he was complicated. There were so many things overlaid his heart. But Samson at heart still wanted to belong to God. At heart, Samson still knew that he belonged to God. And Samson still wanted to serve God. And he went out to do that very thing, not knowing that God was no longer with him. What a shock it was. He went out to exercise his strength, and it wasn't there. It had gone completely. I've written down on my bit of paper here, when had God left him? At what stage? I don't know. But I've also written down in my bit of paper, and I speak from a burdened heart, and I know tonight right through the sermon I speak by the Spirit of God. If I ask the question, are you a backslider? Are you adrift from God? Have you sold out spiritually? You will say, oh no. Well, Samson said the same. He didn't know that God had left him. Yes, I'm pausing in order that this truth might sink into my own mind and heart, as well as into yours. Oh, it's a sad verse. He awoke from his sleep. Aye, just as some wake up from spiritual sleep and said, I will go out as other times and shake myself free. And he did not know that the Lord had left him. My dear people, is life worth anything if God has left us? Oh, we've got to mention briefly the result. In the latter part of chapter 16, the result was Samson's public shame and Samson's public humiliation. Think of his regret. Aye. Regret's an awful thing to live with. Especially if you feel in yourself that you're in a situation that really can't be properly remedied. Think of his regret. Think of his sense of failure. Think of the agony of his soul. Agony in his soul because of what he might have been for God and what he might have done for God. I wonder if Samson thought about his parents and their hurt. But you know, there's nothing in the story that suggests that Samson became either bitter or self-pitying. He didn't say, oh, poor me. And in time, oh, it must have been costly because the Philistines weren't a kindly people. In time, godly sorrow worked repentance. And there came the time where Samson said, Lord, remember me. Lord, let me die a restored Christian and a restored servant and a restored minister. In his prayer, he's really said, when he said, let Samson, let me die with the Philistines. Oh, he really said, Lord, let Samson be nothing. Oh, Lord, Samson's been a big head, proud all his days. Oh, dear God, let Samson be nothing. Let Samson die. Lord, take me back. And God took him back. It's astonishing, isn't it? God came back to Samson. And in some ways I feel that this was the very first time in all his life that Samson really dealt with God. And this Samson is mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. Perhaps because in spite of all his flaws and faults, he judged Israel 20 years. In spite of the secret compromise in his life, the secret indulgence and the secret self-will, God had used him. Oh yes, but Samson hadn't been a good example. But think, my friends, as we close, if God had really got all of Samson right from the beginning, Samson was the kind of man who could have changed the course of Israel's history. I didn't know how to finish the sermon, but I sat in my study and I remember the words of my brother when he was preaching here one Sunday morning many years ago. And he referred to William Booth, the founder of the Salvation Army, a man mightily used of God, and someone well on through his life asked William Booth, what if anything was the secret of his great usefulness to God? And William Booth said, after a pause, he said, well, right at the beginning, I decided that God would get all there was of William Booth. And I would like to think that by the grace of God, the desire of our hearts tonight for all that lies ahead of us will be that God would have all there is of us. Think of the hymn we sang earlier. I would not give the world my heart and then profess thy love. I pray, God, that by his grace, if we have moved at all away from God, that tonight he will draw us back to himself. When Samson said, Lord, remember me, God took him back. Thanks be to God. Amen.